This is Catherine O'Connell and welcome to Lawyer On Air. If you are looking for inspirational stories about women in law, then this is the podcast for you. Join me and my lawyer ladies as we enjoy a glass of wine after a hard day at work and talk about the world of women in law. It's my passion to share stories of amazing legal ladies who are working as in-house legal counsel, who have law firm roles, who are leading on boards and who are doing law differently. From time to time, I will also invite special guests on the show to share their insights on legal recruiting and tips for getting hired as a successful lawyer in Japan. I hope you will enjoy getting to know these amazing women who I am so proud to share a profession with. I'm glad you're here and I hope you enjoy the show. Hi everyone, welcome to another episode of the Lawyer On Air podcast. I'm the host of the show, Catherine O'Connell. Today I'm joined by Miriam Rose Ivan L. Pereira, or as we like to call her for short, Maros Pereira. Well, Maros is a counsel at Oyabashi LPC and Partners and is a registered foreign lawyer licensed in both the Philippines and the state of New York. Maros joined Oyabashi in 2008 after briefly working at the Graduate School of Law of Kyushu University, where she completed her LLM in International Economic and Business Law in 2007. Prior to studying at Kyushu University for almost 6 years until 2006, she worked at one of the top corporate firms in the Philippines. For over 10 years, she has been supporting Japanese clients at Oyabashi in multiple cross-border transactions and investments. She regularly deals with contractual, intellectual property and labor issues, as well as international dispute resolution and compliance investigation matters. She graduated cum laude when she obtained her degree in journalism from the College of Mass Communications of the University of Philippines and later obtained her law degree from the College of Law of the same university. Well, she is a very active person outside of work and probably one of the very most active people I know. These activities include serving as a volunteer public relations officer of the Japan Commercial Arbitration Association, the JCAA, which is the leading commercial arbitral institution in Japan. She regularly organizes events as the co-founder and vice chair on the Executive Committee of Energy-Related Arbitration Practitioners, also called ENERAP, ENERAP, maybe that's how you pronounce it, the Japan chapter of that organization. And she's been doing that since 2021 and is also vice chair, Technology, Media and Telecommunications Committee of the Inter-Pacific Bar Association. As a member of the New York State Bar Association, she has also helped organize diversity and human rights activities. Maros also is lecturing from time to time at Kyushu University, and next year she has been invited to teach a course at Temple University in Tokyo. She has also published several articles about Philippine legal updates and the rules of the JCAA. And when she's not doing law or these amazing outside activities, Maros loves to travel. She enjoys exploring the many gardens, temples, castles, and small towns and museums in Japan. I love doing that too. She also takes pleasure in bringing people together for small gatherings. And she loves nature and would find herself visiting some of her favorite spots or simply wandering around a new spot in Tokyo. Well, I can't wait to get started. Maros, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Catherine, for having me. It's such an honor and a pleasure to be here today.
Well, I love meeting up with you online here, but if we're going to meet up in person, where would we be? Do you have a favorite wine bar or restaurant you love to go to, or a cafe? And what would be your choice of beverage off the menu today?
Well, I do have a favorite coffee shop. It's called the Rose Bakery in Marunouchi. It's my go-to place for hot chocolate, and I really love their carrot cake. So I would love to bring you there.
Ooh, carrot cake. I haven't had carrot cake for a while. That's got me thinking. That's great. Okay, thank you very much for that. And I'm trying to think when we first met, and I think it's a Roppongi Bar Association at Thomson Reuters way back. Would that be right?
Probably, yes.
And now we often connect through the ACCJ, the American Chamber Legal Services and IP Committee, where you're very active as well. I didn't even mention that in the beginning, but you're active there as well, joining our events. So it's really great to have you on the show today.
Thank you.
Let's go back then to your childhood, or even when you're a young adult. Do you remember the kind of career that you were thinking of at that time? What did you want to be?
At that time, I was thinking maybe I could be a lawyer.
Really?
Yeah, because my mom was actually studying law. She studied law.
Yeah, right. That's
Yeah.
interesting.
So I
Oh.
really looked up to her. I mean, she was really amazing at balancing studying law, teaching, and raising us kids. So sometimes to make things work, she would just invite her classmates to come over, and they would have all these legal discussions, for their work projects or just preparing for an exam or whatever. And it would just be very exciting and interesting for me to watch them discuss about legal concepts. And so I think even at that time, although I wasn't sure it was going to be a possibility, I really did want to become a lawyer.
Wow, how old are you then when you're sort of hearing these conversations going on?
I was in high school.
Ah, and you were sort of able to just be sitting at the table or just sort of wandering around and just.
Gathering around
Ah,
over here, bits and pieces.
wow. So when did that turn then concretely for you into, right, I'm going to go ahead and be a lawyer?
So
Huh.
it became a possibility when I went to college. So I went to the University of the Philippines, and there was also a College of Law there. So it became a possibility for me to actually pursue law there.
How did you know to go and find out about that? What drove you there? Did you know you wanted to go to university, but it happened that there was also this law school in the university where you went to?
I was part of a group called the Sigma Alpha Nu Sorority, and we did have like sisters who were actually studying law. We had a counterpart organization, and they were also like students studying law. And I would see them like study in the place where we would like hang out. So it just made it more possible. So I
Right.
just took the exam for the entrance exam for the university, and then I pursued it.
Oh, so did those people, were they kind of like mentors in a way to you then, or guided you to, yeah, take it up, go for it, you know, you can do it?
Yeah,
Were
that's
they
true.
like that?
That's true, actually, yeah.
So how long is the law course there?
4 years.
Okay, so you graduate then, right? And are you the first lawyer in your family, or did your mum end up going through and becoming a lawyer, or she just loved the study of law?
Yes, I think I am the first lawyer in the family.
Wow, exciting. Have others come through after you?
There's like a relative who also
Yes.
studied law, and yeah, so there are a couple of lawyers,
Ah.
like, but not in the immediate family.
Yeah, but you're carrying the light and leading the way. So, what happened then after you graduated? Did you find a job in a law firm?
Yes. So with three of my classmates, we joined this corporate firm, Picasso Law. And in that firm, I really learned a lot from some very, very brilliant people. So from the corp side, from labor side, from litigation side, I was exposed to different types of law.
How cool, though, to join the same firm with three of your classmates. It would have
Yes.
felt a little bit easier in that way, yeah?
Yeah, that's true.
Ah, so tell us about those first few years then as a new lawyer and some of the things that you really loved about the job and maybe some of the challenges you had then.
It was a very busy time. I think all young associates would probably agree that, you sort of like doubt your decision to become a lawyer in those first few years because it's just basically just all work, right? But there were rewarding moments as well when you get to do something that you thought you couldn't actually do. Like, for example, I was involved in this very, very big construction arbitration case, and to be able to prepare such a complex pleading was like, wow, it was great.
So you were involved in arbitration from the very beginning. Did you do mostly that? I heard you say just before about employment law and other matters, but
Yes.
was that sort of where you wanted to go? Were you more inclined towards litigation or dispute resolution rather than, say, commercial transaction?
I think it was really both. I like both. I like the kind of transactional aspect. I also like dealing with the clients, but I also like the problem-solving complex type of litigation where you really had to like look at the law and see how the law applies in your favor to resolve a dispute. So I really like both types. And even now, I still do both types. I still do transactional work and I do dispute resolution. And then I also do some compliance investigation. I like the variety.
Yeah, the variety is good, isn't it? And so what were some of the really the highs that you can think about during those first years? Was there something that stands out? Maybe it was a work project that you did or collaborating with another lawyer or something like that that stood out for you in those initial stages.
I remember that construction arbitration case, which was one of the biggest ones at the time. I also remember basically handling from start to finish, setting up corporations, selling them, listing them,
Right.
dissolving them. So it's just different aspects of a corporate life.
Yeah, and that's pretty cool, isn't it? From start to finish, you don't only just set up and then they go and do their thing and you never hear from them again, perhaps. You've actually wound up corporations as well. So you've seen the full cycle. That's really very interesting as a new lawyer to be able to do that kind of work. Yeah. And so from those early days, then, what's been your journey up till now?
I think I'm still doing different types of law, and I still really enjoy the diversity of the different legal fields that I come across in my profession. It's just more of a continuation, although I guess it's more international at the moment. So I guess
And
it'll be different jurisdictions, not just the Philippines.
right, and you around, I think I'm calculating from your profile, but maybe it was around 2000, I think you came to Japan for further study.
2006,
Oh,
yes.
was it 2006? Okay. So
Yes.
what prompted you to come to Japan? I mean, you don't just wake up one day, perhaps, or maybe you did.
Yeah, you
Hey,
did.
I want to go to Japan.
My case.
Where did that come from to come over here?
For me, it was more like I wanted to learn more. So after 6 years of doing the legal practice in the Philippines, I wanted to learn more. And I've always been attracted to international work, even when I was in the firm. So I wanted to study something international. And a few years before I actually made that decision, I've heard about the program in Japan. And I've been to Japan once, and I was very, very impressed with the lifestyle here, how, everything just works and the people are so kind. So I thought that this program, the Young Leaders Program of Kyushu University, was the perfect fit for me. It wasn't too far away from the Philippines. It's a safe country, and it was about something that I really wanted to learn about, so international economic and business law. And so
Ah, I
I applied
see.
for it.
Right, so it was a program. I was going to ask you how you found out about the study options in Japan, but how did you do that? Did you find out about the program from someone else, or you did your own research to find out about the Kyushu University program?
I found out about the program from a friend. So he was working at the Japanese embassy in the Philippines at that time. He mentioned a program, and when he first mentioned it at that time, I was still a young lawyer. I was thinking, oh no, I have to practice more first before I go for a master's, program. But after I think 6 years, I was thinking, okay, this is the best time to go for a master's program.
Wow, right. Okay. And
Going
so,
back to
how
that
did.
initial tip.
Yeah. So, it takes a little bit of time to build up your I'm ready for it kind of confidence. That's what you're saying.
Basically it was timing. Like after, 2 years of practice, you're still basically still learning the ropes. So I felt like if I wanted to go for a master's, I needed to be prepared to really know like what I wanted to focus on.
So how did you know you were ready then? Did you feel it? Is it a feeling that you had, or did someone say, look, you've already got your 6 years, you should be ready to go now? What happened that made you sort of make your decision?
Yeah, I think it was just basically f 5 or 6 years you feel like you're ready. It's really a transition period, I think, for any lawyer.
And if you could turn back now and talk to yourself, right, who was at that 2 year stage, or just your younger self, if you could do that now and look at her in the mirror, what would you tell her?
2 year lawyer, I would have probably told myself to study language as well.
Ah, language. Japanese
Not
language
just the law.
or Japanese
Not
language?
just the law. I think any language.
Any
I
language.
think there's because I really wanted an international practice. Language is really like inherent in that kind of field. So if I had kept on, because I studied German
Did
and
you?
Spanish in college, but
Oh.
I basically shelved whatever knowledge I had of those languages while I was working. So 2 years pass and then 6 years and then the language is just basically gone because you don't really use it. But if I had known, I would have probably kept on dabbling in German and Spanish even while I was working.
Do you use those languages now while you're in Japan?
No, not at all.
There might be a way to pick them up again.
Yeah, but now I'm trying to focus on improving Japanese.
Yeah, wow. Good on you. Wow, goodness me, that's so amazing. You joined though after the study, you did join a firm in Japan, or did you go back to Philippines for a while after the study finished?
I joined a firm.
Right.
In Kyushu University, we had a couple of lecturers coming from Ohebashi, and I was really impressed with them. So they were friendly, they were smart, they were very nice. And so I actually did an internship with Ohebashi. So I did a short internship and I really liked the firm, the culture, the people. And there was an opportunity to join the firm, so I joined the firm.
Take me back to the internship. How did that come about?
I requested to work with them for about a week in Osaka.
Yes.
So I had the chance to work with a founding partner, managing partner, and some of the other lawyers there. It was interesting because I've some of the work there, like they asked me to do, I've never done that kind of work in the Philippines. So it's fairly new. I mean, some of the items, like for example, a simple disclosure agreement, we've done that in the Philippines. But other things that were interesting, I can't remember now, but I just remember that it was exciting. I knew that when I was doing the internship, wow, this is what it would feel like to work in an international law firm.
Right. How did you actually just stay for a week or a bit longer?
I stayed for a week.
Okay.
It was just during the vacation, and actually my mom was around, so we would also go sightseeing.
Nice. That's so nice. And then did you said this opportunity came up and did they reach out to you?
Yeah. My colleague told me about the opening at the
Oh.
firm, and then said, "Okay, well, yeah, sure. Why not?"
Wow.
So I
Yeah.
applied.
So I'm hearing there that it's really important to keep in touch with people who give you opportunities, right? You had the week and you kept in touch with the colleague, and that colleague let you know. So it's really important not to just do a one and done, right? That you just do your week and then thanks very much, but you keep in touch. And obviously, it sounds like you had a liking for them. You liked them, and
Yes.
that kept you interested, which is really important, I think, for people who might be listening to know that you just really need to keep up your relationships in Japan very much. I would say globally, in any situation, you need to keep up relationships, keep in touch with people who've looked after you.
That's true.
So what would you say then is one of the most important sort of personality traits or strengths for someone who wants to work in the legal industry in Japan to be successful?
I think, as you said, it's about relationships. So, yeah, being friendly,
Yeah, friendly indeed.
easy to approach. I mean, especially like with the Japanese, sometimes just the fact that you're a foreign lawyer can be very intimidating. So you really have to like make the first step, try to reach out, just be someone that they wouldn't be intimidated to approach.
How do you make them feel at ease?
Say hi, hello. It really starts with that.
Well, I think anyone listening can hear the smile in your voice. I'm sure that your face and the way that you approach people, that you don't, even if you're nervous, I think you're not probably showing that you're nervous. And just showing a welcoming face and attitude to people can be more valuable than anything else that you actually say, if it comes from that first impression. Is there anything that working in Japan or in your business or in your career as a lawyer that you didn't expect? It's been different to what you thought it might be.
I guess like working in the Philippines, we do have like group activities and stuff. In Japan, like a new experience for me was like going to the onsen together. We used to have office trips, and usually there would be like an onsen in those office trips. So it's a very Japanese type of office trip. So I guess that's a new experience, like drinking together and then, going to the onsen together. It's a whole different level of being colleague.
The hot pools, right? The hot baths, which in Japan you do not wear a swimming costume, so you are in your birthday suit, as they say, and so it's quite an
That's right.
unexpected, especially with your work colleagues. It's different, perhaps, going with friends or girlfriends together. You're obviously separated, male and female, in the onsen in Japan, but that would have been a big shock. Were you were there with your other female colleagues then?
Yes, of course, yeah.
I know a lot of great conversations happen in the onsen, though, too.
True.
Do you work long hours in your current role?
I don't really think about the hours.
Mm.
It's pretty flexible. You can work at home, you can work in the office. I mean, sometimes, yeah, like if you're trying to meet a deadline. Like recently we were in an emergency arbitration case and the deadlines are pretty short, so sometimes you have to like work until the morning until you can submit the or share the draft with your colleagues, and then you go to sleep for a couple of hours and while they're reviewing the draft. So sometimes you do have to work extraordinary hours, but in general it's pretty flexible. You can manage your time. Just wake up early or just, wake up late, but it's really up to you.
Okay. Well, I know you get involved in pretty big arbitrations. That must take you away from daily work or other clients and activities. So how do you manage your calendar? Is there some productivity hack, shall we say, some other tip that you have for managing your calendar?
I
Huh.
think maybe communication. So you try to picture what you can do for a day, and then you try to request for your, because I also deal with other partners and other work, and so I just request them that okay, I'll be busy with this item for the next 2 days, but maybe on Wednesday I can help you with this matter. So just being in communication with your colleagues, just letting them know when you can work on a matter, what
Right.
Yeah, basically what you can manage in a
Right,
day.
managing your time, managing people, right, and their
Yeah,
expectations.
that's right. That's right. Managing their expectations.
Yeah, if you don't tell anybody or convey what's going on, they're not going to be able to read it and interpret it unless you
Exactly.
tell them. Yeah.
Yeah.
Has there been someone along the way there who's guided you as a mentor in Japan or beyond Japan just to keep you going? You've stayed here a long time. What's helping you? So through, those sort of colleagues or other people who may be professional mentors or coaches for you.
Our managing partner, Shiro Kunya, he's one of my, well, I consider him as one of my mentors, and he's been very supportive of my activities inside and outside of her. And I think having a group of friends who are also lawyers, it has been very, very supporting.
Well, let's take on those activities because I do want to go in there. You're one of the most prolific, really, really volunteering so much of your time. You devote a lot of time to your activities. What does volunteering mean to you?
Sharing myself, sharing what I can do to help promote a cause or to advocate something. I feel like just being a lawyer is probably not enough because it's just for the client, it's maybe just for yourself, but the bigger picture, if I can contribute more to development of law or the legal community or the legal profession, I think that For me, it seems more meaningful to go outside of myself, to go beyond the firm.
Go outside of yourself. Where did that come from, that desire to do that?
I don't know, I've always been like that. I've always wanted to just be of service, to make myself useful.
Did you see anyone else doing that and thought about it, or did it come up for you just naturally?
Maybe again my mom, I guess, so subliminally, because my mom ran for local politics. She, I mean, this was on top of her studying law and teaching, but she also wanted to serve the community. Maybe I got it from her. That's probably why that's probably how I got inspired.
She's your role model. She's inspired you.
Yeah, I think so. He's really made a huge mark in my
That's
life.
really incredible. It's really wonderful, isn't it, that your family, especially your mom, has been such a role model. I mean, think about that, studying the law and also now this volunteering. It's really, as you said, subliminally
Yeah.
come through. Wow. And as part of that volunteering, I mean, which part would you like to talk about? I mean, JCAA is massive for you, but also your work with the Inter-Pacific Bar Association. Tell me about those two bits first, and then we'll go on to NRAP, right? Your co-founding of that. So tell me about JCAA.
So the JCAA came as an opportunity. The former PRO is a friend. We've met a couple of times at the smaller group, because I also organize like just unofficial, like informal gatherings of like female litigators and dispute resolution practitioners here in Japan. So we would sometimes gather and just talk about a topic, or just gather and network. So I've met her through that, and she invited me to consider volunteering as a public relations officer for the JCA. And I thought it was a really great opportunity, because I've always been interested in arbitration and mediation, and I do want to be more exposed to learning more about that field. And especially in Japan, it's such a small community. And so I guess it's small. It's really great because everybody basically knows each other. So it's a great community to sort of like bring closer together to promote arbitration and mediation in Japan. And the JCA needs all the help that it can get. So I'm just really honored that I have a chance to help them, in whatever small way I can. So
Perfect.
it's really great. And for the IPBA, I love that organization because it's really multi-jurisdictional and it's focused on Asia Pacific. I get to meet lawyers from different countries, and there's basically an annual conference, so we get to see each other almost every year, except during the pandemic. Next year, we'll be meeting up again in March in Dubai. And it's great just to reconnect with people from Latin America, from Asia, from Canada, from Europe, and different parts of the world. So I got involved with that again through some friends, because I've been attending the IPBA since 2008, since I joined Ohibashi. My mentor, our managing partner, was a president of the IPBA, and he has been very supportive of IPBA activities. And the group itself is very, very it's a very, very good group. It's not as big as the IBA, but because of its size, it's just a nice size that you can actually get to meet people and nurture your relationships with them. So it's been fun.
And there are different committees, right? So you're the technology, media, telecoms committee, but there are a variety of committees in that
That's true.
IPBA. Yeah.
That's true. I've always been interested in the TMT practice, and I have a lot of friends who are in that field. So it's been great, and we're now putting together my dream panel of about land and urban air mobility. So I'm really
Ooh.
excited about that for next year.
Very exciting. And so how do those two particular involvements that you have help you with your work? I know you said your managing partner encourages you to do this work. How does it then feed back into the work that you do? Is it bringing in new insights, for example, into what you're doing in your daily work?
Definitely new insights. It's part of the learning process. It's not taking a course, but it's learning through networking. It's learning through the activities from the IPBA, through the activities from the JCA. I get to learn more about arbitration and mediation. I get to learn more about transactional work, not just involving technology, but in general, like cross-border work. And how different jurisdictions treat different types of transactions. So it's been great. It supplements what I learned from the practice, basically just gaining more and more knowledge to complement my experience.
I love how you've said that. Because sometimes we do learning at university and we think over and done with, or then we join a firm or an organization and we're learning on the job. But you're saying this is another aspect of how being in a volunteer capacity helps you to learn in different ways, right? It supplements you. I love that way you've described it. And people may discount what volunteering is that you are giving so much of your time or energy to an organization, but you've just called out something really brilliant there, that it's learning coming back to you. You are enriching yourself and supplementing yourself.
Exactly.
And then you went and co-founded another organization, the Energy Related Arbitration Practitioners. What's that? Tell us more.
My friend Peter Harris from Clifford Chance invited me to help put together this the group. It's again, it's a volunteer. It's more of like an educational platform to bring together practitioners or just people who are interested in energy-related arbitration. And again, it's more again learning, exchanging ideas, bringing together some experts together so that more people can learn. It's also been a great venture.
Wow, how often do you do something on that group, like do events or panels, or is it really quite informal that you gather together and talk about energy related arbitration?
We've done two events so far. We're doing another one early next year. So at least once or twice a year. Yeah, we put together an event. And NRAP, it was actually started by Jorge, who's based in Mexico. And this was his idea to bring people who are interested in this field from different jurisdictions. So there are different chapters. And we're part of the Japan chapter, but we're also part of this global group who are similarly minded and who similarly want to learn and promote energy-related arbitration. So again, volunteer, it's in the it's in
Right.
that kind of a spirit, just getting people together and to exchange ideas and learn from each other.
Right. And when people are volunteering, I find sometimes that they may not all have the same amount of energy as you do or motivation. How do you mobilize people? How do you motivate them to bring in their energy to volunteer activities?
Each person, they have their own different like plate of activities. Like many of the people, for example, in our group, they're all very, very, very busy people, but they do have a commitment to contribute. For me, it's a matter of finding a way to facilitate that. What can they contribute? Like to what extent? And then just maximize that.
That's really great to hear. Thank you for that. Anything else about volunteering that you'd like to talk about here?
Well, I hope more people will volunteer.
Yeah, I mean, would you
Yeah.
recommend it for lawyers to do volunteering?
That's true. I guess it's also providing the opportunity, giving people the opportunity to contribute. So sometimes when we put together a panel, we invite people to be speakers, right? So that's an opportunity for them to volunteer, to contribute their time. I guess we just need more and more opportunities for people to show up and contribute.
And how do you manage that then with, I know you've got the support of your managing partner, But how do you manage the meshing of your career and this broader life that you've got?
But I do have my small calendar here. You just put in whatever activities. And sometimes, like, I would meet someone for the first time, and I would think, oh, maybe this person could be someone who could share what she knows about this area. And then eventually down the line, there would be some kind of program that sort of like fits, and then it would click. Oh, wait, I met this person, and I think she or he would be a good speaker for this topic. I just keep mental notes of people who I think would be willing to share their knowledge and to contribute.
That's great, isn't it? It's also thinking beyond the usual suspects, the usual people who might be speaking, and giving, as you're saying, it's giving an opportunity. And with you being a volunteer, you can volunteer others as well and help
That's
them
true.
bring them along as well. I really love that. And also, as one of your other activities, you've been invited to teach a course next year at Temple University, and you teach from time to time back at Kyushu University where you did your program. If someone wanted to use their lawyer talents to be a teacher in Japan, how do they go about doing that? And tell us more about this course that you're doing. And can we all join this course?
I don't know if everyone can join. I'm not sure. Gosh, yeah, actually that has been quite a challenge. Most of my subjects are more based on what I've learned in the practice and what I would think, like if I were the student, oh, I would want to know that from a practitioner's point of view. So it's not so academic. I mean, there may be like basic concepts are academic, but I try to make it more practical. I've taught contracts, I've taught arbitration, mediation. Those are the main subjects that I've lectured on. There are a couple of lectures which are more like just informative, like legal developments in the Philippines or something similar. But for this upcoming course, it was such a great opportunity to be invited by Tina Saunders of Temple University, and she wants a course that's more interactive, and I haven't well I think I've done interactive courses to a certain extent, but this is a new thing for me, so I'm really excited to design a course that's more interactive with the students, more practical or oriented. And it's going to be about advising multinational companies on global legal issues. And there's so many interesting global issues to choose from. So I'm now like trying to think of like, okay, if I were a student, what global issues would I want to
You
know?
are designing this course, I heard you say.
Yes, I'm designing.
Whoa, that
That's
is cool. That is
exciting.
very cool. You can just create something.
Exactly. So I'm just really excited
Wow.
about
Advising multinational companies on global legal issues. Whoa, that
it.
is so cool. I look forward to hearing more about that, and would really love you to talk more about that when you're out and about, right? And
Yeah.
maybe you could come and speak at Women in Law Japan, or do another episode here where we talk about just that course and what you taught and the learnings that you got from the students, because I know you like your two-way
Yeah.
interaction there, and
Yeah.
just, you know, how you go about designing a course and how this happens. It's a really interesting topic. Well done you for that.
Thank you.
So what else there? Is there anything else with the Kyushu University that you're also doing there? Have you said from time to time, is that tapping into those contracts, arbitration, litigation? Maybe, you know, you could design a course for them as well.
I did the intensive course on contracts and advocacy and arbitration before, as recent as last month. I gave a lecture on arbitration in Japan and at the JCE. It was very interesting because the group it was a group of to a group of students from different countries. I love the combination of those students because you can actually hear from their perspective how things are going on in their country. So it's one of the reasons why I love to teach at Kyushu University. They come from different jurisdictions. And they're all excited to exchange ideas about what's going on in their respective jurisdictions.
Great. I look forward to hearing more from you. I think it'd be really great to see some like articles on LinkedIn or some sort of posts like that about what you're doing, because I think it really opens up people's eyes who may not have known about this, and I'm really glad you've been able to speak about it today here.
Yeah, maybe I should try to post more.
I think it'd be very interesting to
That's
hear
still
from you.
something I haven't really explored much.
Could
Social
be.
media.
Yeah, give it a go maybe. So what would be then your best advice that you've received from somebody, or your in fact also the worst advice that you've received?
Best advice is to say yes, then figure out the details later. That was basically the advice to me, I remember, by my mentor or managing partner when I was invited to co-chair the conference of the New York State Bar Association in Tokyo. Just say yes. And
Yeah, I like
it
that. I
was such
like
a
that.
great, experience. I mean, it was the first time for me to help put together this conference in Tokyo. It was quite successful. And I met so many interesting people from that experience, and it was great. First conference, but yeah,
Well done, you.
just say yes and figure out the details later.
I guess the opposite of that is. No, don't do it. Don't do it. Don't do it until you've got everything all lined up. That's almost the reverse, which should be
I
worst
suppose.
advice. So, what about then your advice for other lawyers, maybe women lawyers, other young lawyers, law students who are listening in? What one or two pieces of advice would you give them?
I think it would be maybe similar to what I've been doing, just saying yes to the unknown and the unfamiliar, because you'll just be you might be surprised by the unexpected. And sometimes the opportunities, they just come just very briefly, will be there, and if you don't say yes to it or snatch it, will just pass. So don't miss out on those kinds of opportunities.
Brilliant. Anything else?
Keep on learning language. I think language is really a very, very interesting aspect of the law, especially for international or cross-border kind of work. It's very interesting to always have not just, for example, English, but other languages as well. I have colleagues who can speak in Chinese, and I really, really envy them.
Oh, I see. So, how is it an important aspect of law? Language.
It opens up more opportunities. You get clients who can deal with you in another language. So, for example, if you can speak Chinese, you also get more China related work. Or if you can speak French or German, you'll probably get more of those kind of work as well.
That's great, right? And that's good for a global career, international career, having that
Yeah.
language component.
And it's true, and dealing with the counsel overseas, if they know that you can speak a different language, they would feel more comfortable working with you.
I see. Well, what ideas and thoughts have you got about the development then of law in your fields? In general, I guess, in the next, 2, 3, 4, 5 years or so.
I'm hoping that for arbitration, there will be more synergy between arbitration and mediation, like how you can actually explore those two ADR tools together in an efficient manner. And I'm excited about the new rules of the JCA to see how that would somehow influence maybe other jurisdictions. Maybe they would create something similar, just a more interactive way of arbitrating, which basically brings parties closer to potentially settling their disputes. So I'm excited to see how the JCA's new rules would make waves in maybe Asia, maybe be even beyond Asia.
That's an interesting point because often Japan is reactive to other jurisdictions' rules, but what you're saying is that Japan could actually be a front runner here in helping other countries through the rules that they're putting in place. Is that right?
Yeah, basically.
And that's almost coming from the cultural and business cultural background of Japan, that people generally don't like litigation or disputes or confrontation. And so perhaps the rules are based on, as you said, bringing parties closer together. This could be a really interesting way for Japan to shine in the on the global arbitration stage.
That's true. It's really culturally inspired, and how the arbitrator, who could also be appointed as the mediator, could facilitate that kind of dispute resolution.
Right. And any challenges you see in the field of law or challenges to those opportunities you've been speaking about?
Possibly, maybe there might be some, resistance to. So to something new, like, I mean, if you're used to conducting dispute resolution in a certain way, like for so many years, right? There might be some resistance to conducting dispute resolution in a new way. So I guess that's the only challenge, a challenge to try to break away from tradition, to not conform.
Right. I've got a tough question for you. If you've got a legal project and I had the power to remove all the barriers and constraints from that legal project, what would you do with that? And what would you want to be known by for that project?
I think if there would be a good project to be known for, it would probably be along the lines of the new rules of the JCA, like maybe develop a clear protocol on how to use those interactive rules together with mediation. Maybe. It creates more transparency, it creates clear guidelines for parties.
And you'd be the one who would be the person who helped significantly clear up those protocols.
Yeah, basically.
Yeah, that's exciting. So, how about you and your future career there? Where do you see it might be heading?
I hope I get to do more of what I'm doing.
Oh, good. More of what you're doing.
And maybe exploring again and something new. Like, I haven't really dabbled yet much in space law. I've done contracts involving satellites for space, but I would love to learn more about like that field of law.
Very exciting. I love that. I've recently met some space-related people. I can certainly introduce you. You can talk about the troubles that they have and create something around
Yeah,
what's
like
going on
dispute
there.
resolution around that.
Yeah, a solution around that. Sounds exciting. Woo. Any other final comments or wisdom to share on careers or the profession and taking opportunities?
I guess it's just being open. Being open to sharing more of what you've experienced with other people. That could be students, that could be other practitioners. It could be your friends, just sharing yourself with the world.
Beautiful. And is there anything we didn't cover today that you wanted to mention, or anything we did talk about but you want to re-emphasize or elaborate on?
Maybe just to again to mention that we just need to create more opportunities so that people can help and contribute. So if more people create opportunities like that, more people can contribute.
Fabulous. Thank you so much. Well, I'm going to finish up the conversation now on a slightly lighter note with the final quick fire round of questions. If you've listened to podcasts before, everyone has who's a subscriber and an avid listener will know that this is how I wind up the interviews. So here we go. You ready?
Okay.
Okay. If you could start a totally different business tomorrow, do a completely different occupation, what would that business or occupation be?
I'd probably be in the fashion business.
Oh, tell me more about that.
Right, because my grandma actually makes her own clothes. So I've always like been very impressed with her designs, and she's just really, really creative. But I never got around to actually learning how to make a dress. But that was her gift. That was the gift that she shared with the world.
Fantastic. Maybe fashion is a another language.
Yeah, probably. It's also an expression of creativity. So,
Sure is.
yeah, so for me, I express myself creatively through law, through the variety of, fields of law that I dabble in and learn and try to master in my own way. So it's just a different kind of creativity.
Beautiful. If you could write a book tomorrow, what would you write about?
Oh, if I could write a book, I would write about the beautiful places in Japan, the places that I've been to that have been really interesting, and I think people would love to see as well and experience.
Which place in particular do you love?
I love Nikko, Kamakura, Enoshima. There was this beautiful Kurukawa Onsen that I recently went to. Cute small towns. Kyoto, of course. There are lots of, like, especially northern Kyoto, it's smaller places, not easy to get to. So a lot of places that I would love to write about.
Sounds like you could write the book on spots that start with the letter K.
Oh
Kurokawa,
yeah,
Kamakura, Kyoto. Okay. Maybe
that's right. That's true.
that could be very cute. Well, okay, if you could have a billboard, a sort of sign that had anything on it about yourself, what would it be? What would it say?
Well, I was thinking it's more like ready to share.
Ready to share. That's
Something like that.
good. That's really good. Can you share a podcast or a book that you are listening to or reading or have recently listened to or read that you could recommend?
Your podcast.
Thank you so much.
No, so I was listening to your podcast and I thought it was really inspiring. So I
Thank
would recommend your podcast.
you. What's your favorite saying?
If there's a will, there's a way.
Love it. That's really great. And one last question is, what is something about you that a lot of people do not know?
They probably don't know that I'm half Malaysian.
Half Malaysian. I did not know that.
Yeah, I'm half Malaysian, Indian actually,
Wow.
from my father's side. We're from Kerala.
Fantastic.
I've always had a soft spot for India, and when I went to visit, it felt like home. It was interesting. I rarely feel like that, when I go overseas, but I felt a connection to India.
Fantastic. You may not have listened to her episode yet, Pavitra's episode. You probably could go away and listen to that next weekend, and listen in to hers because you might get some inspiration there and you might find a bond. I'd love that to happen across anyone who's been on the episode, but I think if you've got a connection to India, she's your lady.
Yeah, I know her. She's really good.
Good. Okay, that's great. Well, we've come to the end of our chat today, and I just want to thank you again for being such an open guest on the show and someone who's giving, just as everyone can tell, so much to the community as a volunteer lawyer, as well as being really active in your field of work and, devoted to getting Tokyo as a center for arbitration of disputes, to have those new rules put in place. It's just been an absolute pleasure speaking with you, and I really think it's been fantastic and hope that people can connect with you. Can listeners do that? Can they somehow get in touch with you?
Yes, I'm on LinkedIn.
Well, we'll put that in the show notes, your LinkedIn link. So anyone who's interested in connecting and learning from you can connect up, and we'll finish up here. And for my listeners, I really hope that if you've liked this episode, please do give it a short review. That helps Lawyer on Air be seen and heard by more people. And you can pop on over to my webpage where this episode is and leave a voicemail. It sounds kind of funny, but you can actually just click and a minute will record your voice about what you heard inspirationally from the guest that you just listened to. So please do go ahead, share the episode with someone you think will enjoy listening and be inspired to lead a wonderful lawyer extraordinaire life. Thanks for everyone, and cheers, kanpai, and bye for now. Thank you so much for listening today to this episode of Lawyer on Air. I really hope that you were inspired by the story you heard and that you discovered something new about women in the law. Please subscribe to the show so that you don't miss future episodes. And if you can think of even just one person to share this episode with, that would make my day. I invite you to connect with me to talk more. Jump on over to LinkedIn or Instagram where you can find me, or send me a message via my website contact page. That's all from me today. I look forward to seeing you right here on the next episode of Lawyer on Air. Cheers, kampai, and bye for now.